Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is co-host Arzu.
Hello.
Last week we talked about Stargate SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 17 and 18, where some Gwolds were attempting dangerous shenanigans. And today we'll be talking about Season 5, Episodes 19 and 20, Menace and the Sentinel. Menace premiered on April 26, 2002, was written by James Ticknor. I don't know how to say that. Tishnor? Sure. And Peter DeLuise, and directed by Martin Wood. The Sentinel premiered on May 3, 2002. It was written by Ronald Wilkerson and directed by Peter DeLuise. So, surprisingly enough, both of these episodes deal with a blend of human and machine, so it's interesting that they got paired together. Maybe weird that they aired back-to-back? I don't know. Arzu, would you please summarize these episodes?
So, Menace, the team, finds a young woman who is a robot but doesn't realize she's a robot and is also extremely annoying and doesn't realize that either, who has a special relationship with the replicators, which are back. Mm-hmm. And the Sentinel, maybe this is on me for trying to watch an episode after getting a COVID booster, but the Sentinel confused the hell out of me. Because it called back to a lot of episodes that I don't remember watching. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I must have. But the previously on, I was like, this looks like a really cool episode. I guess I've seen it, but I don't have any memory of it. But the point is that they team up with some other SG teams and a couple of comics. Mm-hmm. And go to another planet to deal with something called the Sentinel.
Yeah. Okay, let's do our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote, "Why don't you kiss her?" And your guess was that you hope it's Daniel talking about Jack and Sam, but you actually think it's Sam talking to Daniel about the woman of the week. And you got the context right, but it was Jack who delivered the line.
The minute I started watching this week, I was like, it's probably Jack and not Sam. Just like looking at the notes again, I'm like, that wasn't Sam, was it? Yeah.
Oh, well. So we start off Menace with an abandoned garden, but for an abandoned garden, it really wasn't that overgrown. I mean, it was obviously like a CGI kind of setup. Like, they really could have like beefed up the overgrown part of this garden to make it more convincing. But anyway, Sam detects an energy reading, but she says it's nothing dangerous as far as she can tell. And I'm like, okay, famous last words. We'll see how that goes. And so they find this room with this woman who looks like she's asleep but is perfectly preserved, but she's the one emitting the energy. So Sam thinks that she must be a robot and she wants to take her back to the SGC to study her. And I'm like, listen, a perfectly preserved person emitting energy on their own, what are you doing? Get out of there. It's not safe.
If somebody is emitting that level of signal, bringing them home is a bad idea.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, Sam, I thought you were smarter than this.
They, in this episode, are just a special level of stupid. Except Daniel. For some reason, he's the voice of reason. And I'm like, you had to make everybody else uncharacteristically stupid for Daniel to be the voice of reason.
Hey, you know, he has his moments. He's not dumb.
Like, he's not dumb, but like, for him to be like the wise one, the sage one, the only one who knows like what's going on, I'm like, everybody else had to be a special kind of dumb. Anyway, that's my Daniel dig for the day.
So they take her back and Sam runs a bunch of tests and figures out that she's an android, and then she has nanotechnology, and then she finds a little like mini CD-ROM drive in her neck. And so it's like her power core, and Sam is able to charge her power core. Then they're like
calling her an it, which I didn't like.
Yeah, I really didn't like the like depersonification of this girl the whole time.
Especially because I can say with almost absolute certainty that Jack's the kind of person who will call a boat a she.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the girl wakes up. She says her name is Reese, and she doesn't seem to know that she's a robot, or like Daniel thinks that she's not. And so they have this conversation away from Reese where Daniel's like, you know, I don't, like, we just told her that her planet was destroyed and her father is dead. Like, we don't also need to broach the subject of the fact that she's a robot because maybe she doesn't know. And Jack is being such an a-hole about it because he's like, it's an it. Like, it's a machine. Like, who cares? And it's like, okay, but Daniel is right. She could be a stored consciousness of somebody who used to be human. Mm-hmm. Or maybe she was simply created to believe that she was human and is going to be extremely distressed when she finds out she's not. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. And I'm like, Jack, I really need you to stop being an a-hole.
He was just so weirdly obtuse this week.
Yeah.
Like, not considerate. Such an idiot. He was weirdly aggressive with Daniel. Yeah. He's a little ahead, but when Reese like throws him into the wall,
mm-hmm.
and Jack's like, I want to shove you into the wall sometimes. I'm like, that's so aggressive. I get it. Same. But that's like weirdly aggressive. Like,
mm-hmm.
I thought we'd like kind of move past this.
Yeah. I feel like Jack gets moody sometimes, and I'm like, I need you to calm down, buddy.
It's like too moody.
Yeah, and then, like, so Jack goes back to the planet to see if he can find more evidence of stuff, and they end up finding some replicator blocks, and the airman that finds them, he's like, I have no idea what this is, but it might be significant, and so obviously Jack recognizes right away, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So you're telling me that, like, a year ago, we discovered this new race called the replicators. It was this whole thing. They almost destroyed Earth because they like came on an Asgard ship and we had to crash it into the ocean. You're telling me that we went through that whole thing and the airmen who work at this base don't know what a replicator block looks like? Like, something's not adding up.
The math is not mathing.
No. And it's like, so does nobody on this base not, like, do they not read the mission reports of the other SG teams? Especially things that are big. Like, if it was something routine, like, oh, you know, SG-10 is on an archaeology dig. Like, okay, I could see not everybody necessarily knowing what they're up to for, like, a 3-month expedition or whatever. But the replicators was a big deal. So how is it that not everybody on this base can immediately recognize what a replicator is? What is going on?
One of those cases of the writers forgot.
I don't know. I mean, part of me wonders if it's like, even within the SGC, if there's still different levels of like classified information and not everybody needs to know everything, but that doesn't make sense when it's such a big deal.
Yeah, like I was gonna say, like, they don't know everything, fine. They don't know the minutiae of like alien tech or weapons or whatever. It's not something they're gonna encounter, but the replicators were like almost killed them.
Yeah, and they're an ongoing issue because they're still fighting with the Asgard. And so we, like, even in this episode, are, I think it's like, what, SG-2 or 3 that goes to try to contact the Asgard, and they're unable to because they're busy fighting the replicators. And so it's like, if one of your main allies is busy fighting this alien creature or whatever, how does everybody on your base not know what that thing is?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so Daniel does like the majority of the talking with Reese, and he does pretty well, like, to restrain himself from like freaking out when she does something weird. I do think that he is a little bit impatient with her. I think maybe they could have used, like, brought in like a child psychologist or something, because I mean, the actress herself is 29 years old at the point of filming. But
okay, that's where I was confused. I'm like, is she a child or is she childlike?
She's childlike. I think it's one of those things that she was probably created in this adult body, but the programming wasn't done quite right for her mind, and so she's mentally a child, so even though, like, she's in an adult body. I don't know. I don't know what the
plot is. I haven't seen it, but all I gather is child's brain and adult woman's body.
Sure. So. You say so.
It's topical now, but by the time you hear this, it won't be anymore.
I don't think I even watched the trailer for that, so I have no idea.
No, neither did I. The pictures freak me out.
But yeah, I really think, I mean, they've had specialists from other areas come into the SGC on this show. So I really think they could have benefited from bringing in a child psychologist to talk to her. Because, I mean, Daniel's very patient. He's probably the most patient one on SG1. But he's also not a specialist. He's not a doctor. I mean, even just having Frasier talk to her might have been better. Because she's a medical doctor and she's probably had at least like a Psych 101 class. You know, so I'm like... Yeah. I feel like that could have been done a little bit better. I mean, Daniel does the best that he can, for sure. But
it's just, I think after that first time when they see how volatile she is and how, like, yeah, you kind of sprang the whole you're not really human thing on her.
Yeah.
But when they see how volatile she is, that's the point where you're like, we need a specialist. Not let's send the guy she just yeeted into the wall back in there.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the... This is what I mean when I say everybody in this episode was an idiot.
Yeah. Well, it's like, not only did they send Daniel back in there, but they also send in Jack, who, like, is openly hostile towards her. And I'm like, he is not helping. Why is Jack in the room right now?
Like, literally, though.
I don't know. Oh, Kira's here. Hi, puppy.
Kira's got opinions.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, Daniel is doing his best, but it's not going super well. And, like, it is not going to be easy to get her to shut down. Oh, man. And so, essentially, Reese feels threatened and she has a bit of a temper tantrum. She creates a replicator and Daniel does not respond well to it. And so, you know, they kind of leave her alone for a while and she gets fed up, and so she ends up making a lot of replicators, which she calls her toys.
And you're bored.
Yeah. I mean, if she's like essentially like an 8-year-old in an adult's body with incredible powers, like, okay.
Very true.
And so essentially the replicators take over the base and they have to, I mean, they, you know, use their weaponry to shoot them, and Reese is actually connected to them, and so she could feel it every time one is destroyed, and she's really upset. And I mean, it is a very interesting backstory for the replicators. I will say that, like, somebody created an android, and the android is the one who created the replicators as a toy. I mean, it's a good background. Yeah, basically it's like this big fight between all the replicators and everybody else, and Hammond and Sam end up going to set the self-destruct because she takes over the computers and they can't get access to anything. And I was like, well, this is the first time that we've seen them locally set off the self-destruct. So, I mean, that's good to know. I mean, that's like a good, like,
kind of assume they would have that option.
Yeah, but we've never seen it, so it's nice to actually see it for once and get that, like, visual confirmation that this is something they can do, even if they don't have computer access.
I have a question about something, like, what your take on something was, but this might be jumping a bit ahead.
Okay, that's fine.
When Daniel winds up confronting her at the end,
uh-huh,
and he's like, your father or whatever built you wrong.
Yeah.
Which is, like, which really sets her off. Initially, like, she's like, I'm wrong, you hate me, whatever, like, I was built wrong. He's like, what is his reason for saying that to her when the rest of what he's saying is trying to talk her down?
I think it's the whole carrot and the stick thing. Like, he's been trying with a carrot this whole time, like, being soft spoken, being nice, being like, you know, reassuring, like, no, nobody hates you. You're going to be fine. He tries
the soft approach like 10 seconds later in the same conversation.
I think it's because, like, he was trying the soft approach the whole time. And I think he just kind of finally realized that it wasn't getting anywhere. And so he tries the stick approach and it does get through to her. But then he pulls it back because I think, like, he really, it's a balance, you know, because when you're dealing with a child, you have to have a balance between your methods, because it's like, well, they need to realize the gravity of what they've done without having no hope for the situation.
But telling her number one fear that she was built wrong is in fact true. Mm-hmm. Seems like a terrible approach. I mean, it worked, but like, I question the rationale of leaning into that and then being like, just kidding, we love you, or whatever.
Well, I think it was kind of like a shock value thing. He was trying to be like, no, it's fine, everything's fine, and she wasn't listening. So it's like, okay, I'm going to say something that's going to make her listen, that's going to make her reframe her thinking, and then we can do a talk down after that.
Okay. Because that whole conversation struck me as odd, because at first I was like, oh damn, like, even Daniel snapped. And then he like reined it in immediately. I was like, maybe not. But
yeah, I don't know. I think he was just going for balance. And honestly, just very strange. I mean, I think it's also just like a try it and see if it sticks kind of thing. Like, let's try being mean and see if that works. But then he doesn't like want to be mean. Like, it's not in his character to want to be mean. So then he like pulls it back.
Yeah. I don't know. This was a very strangely paced episode.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit odd. And like, I feel like Jack is out of character in this episode.
Extremely. Didn't we have a new guy get involved this week? James Tichnor? Has he written episodes before?
I don't remember.
I don't think I've heard that name before.
If he has, not very many.
Maybe that's why. Maybe it was a new writer.
And he doesn't know the team yet. He's got a nice IMDb photo. Well, he's a
visual effects supervisor.
Yeah.
So.
Let's see. He has a writing credit on 4 things. It looks like maybe 3 episodes he's done writing on.
This was his first.
Yep.
He did, yeah, so that's why. That's why everybody's out of character, because it's a new writer. No offense.
Oh, James, it's okay. He looks cute in his photo. He's got
that he's very, for him. Know how to write these characters.
Maybe he'll get better in the next season. He's got 2 episodes next season that he writes. Maybe he'll get better in those. We did have, like, the moment I enjoyed was when the replicators all come out and they all, like, have to get their guns and go shoot them all down or whatever, Hammond obviously, like, ran to the locker room and changed because he's in, like, tactical gear instead of his, like, suit and tie kind of thing. And I think it's so fun when he gets into this gear and he's like getting involved. I'm like, yeah, you get involved. And I love that he chose more of a shotgun style instead of the like automatic that the teams normally use.
That's what he has more experience with.
I'm like, is that like a Texan thing? Is that supposed to be a reference to how he's from Texas because he prefers shotguns?
Oh, I didn't realize that was a Texan thing. I'm like, that's an old guy thing.
Well, I mean, it's like a Southern thing that, you know, the kind of like stereotype of like old men standing on their porches with a shotgun, you know, warding off the enemy or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if it was on purpose or maybe it's like Donis Davis just preferred it. He was like, hey, this looks fun. You know, I don't know.
I just thought the logic is like, he's an old guy. He learned on older tech. He's comfortable with.
I mean, it could be. Okay, so then yeah, I mean, we have this whole shoot-off thing going on, and we have a tech person who is using, like, a blowtorch-type situation to get the door open to the gate room, because Reese has, like, locked herself in there with Daniel. And I was just wondering, when you're using a blowtorch on metal like that, and it's sending sparks everywhere, like, should you maybe have your face more than 3 inches away from the blowtorch?
Yes. Yes.
Because, I mean, I think he might have been wearing protective glasses, but not a whole, like, protective helmet.
Even when it's a protective helmet.
You should still...
go as far back as you can.
And his face was right up in there. And I'm like, is your eyesight that bad?
His face is heat resistant.
Like, where is the safety team on this show? So Daniel tries talking Reese down, and he's almost successful. He almost gets her to agree to shut down all the replicators. And right at that moment, they finally get through the blast door, and Jack comes in and immediately shoots her in the chest. And then I think before she, like, passes out, she does choose to shut down her replicators, or at least that's what Daniel says happened. And so then, like, Daniel and Jack have this whole conversation about, like, whether or not Jack was in the right for doing that. And, like, Daniel's really mad. He's like, you didn't have to shoot her. I was talking her down. And I'm like, honestly,
doing a great job.
I mean, Jack has been an a-hole for most of this episode, but he was right in this moment, because he could not hear their conversation. He didn't know how far Daniel had got with the talk. All he knew was that replicators had taken over the base. They were still actively fighting them, and she was the key to turning them off. He absolutely made the right call in shooting her.
Yeah, but, you know, Daniel forgot that Jack didn't read the script, so. No, I agree. Jack made the right call because, like you said, can't hear the conversation. Mm-hmm. She's the one responsible for the replicators. And also, like, okay, maybe this isn't, like, a justification for what he did, but it's not like he was all that inclined to hear her out to begin with.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not like he made the right call, but definitely made the more objective call.
Made sense for his character, certainly.
Like, I think had this not been... Here's how I want to phrase this. Had this not been a young woman who presents like a child and had just been like an adult man behaving the exact same way,
mm-hmm.
even Daniel would have been like, yeah, shoot him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But then I kind of don't understand, like, quite how far Daniel is going and how upset he is, because he's like,
he's really upset.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, Daniel, I understand that you're upset. You didn't want her to get shot, blah, blah. But you have to remember that she is a machine who can self-repair. She has nanotechnology that can self-repair. She will be fine.
Also, real quick question, because I haven't done this in a while. Why are you more upset over the dead robot than your wife?
Throwing it back.
Well, did he cry this much when Sheree died? No. Like, it's weird.
One could argue that he had been mourning the loss of Sheree before she even died.
Then I would have liked to see it. Instead, he was like, oh my god, walls. Oh my god, a new woman. And I'm like, you're married.
But yeah, no, you're, I mean, I don't understand how emotional he gets. I mean, I kind of do, because he's like, he does these emotional displays, but she can self-repair. All you have to do is, like, make sure her power core is fully charged and she'll be fine. So I don't understand why this is such a big deal. So yeah, they have plans now to eventually hand her over to the Asgard, and hopefully that, you know, she can help them figure out their war with the replicators once they get a hold of the Asgard, because they're, you know, haven't been able to contact them yet. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure the Asgard can help her heal the bullet wound and wake her up if they really want to. Like, it's fine, Daniel.
I just I didn't even think about that, but yeah, she's like an android.
Mm-hmm.
She so can I be really don't know why he's as upset as yeah. he is.
It's like
upset
yeah,
she's back, maybe. Sure, but
yeah, but it's like she's not like dead, dead. She's just in stasis.
Really don't get why he's this upset.
I don't know. And he like promises her that he's gonna be there when she wakes up, and I'm like, well, that doesn't happen for the rest of the SG-1 run, so
yeah, he was there off screen somewhere. She doesn't come back, does she?
Oh no, she doesn't come back.
Yeah, so she woke up off screen somewhere and Daniel was there, and then like every other woman in his life, he promptly forgot about her. So oh, I got two in there today. Look at that.
You're on a roll.
That's it, though.
I mean, I'm sure you can find something to say about him in the next episode, too.
Eh.
So I think that's all I have to say about this one. I feel like, I think it's an interesting backstory for the Replicator, certainly. It was a little bit of a weirdly paced episode, and I didn't like how Jack was acting. Even Sam was less sympathetic than I hoped she would be. But it was all right.
People at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. It wasn't bad. It was just kind of like, all right. That was an episode.
It had a beginning, a middle-ish, and an end.
Yeah, probably not one that I'm going to like rewatch a bunch of times, but...
No.
Ready to go to the Sentinel?
Yes.
So we start this episode with Jack handing in a mission report late. And Hammond does not care because he has bigger fish to fry. I think it's SG-9? I don't know. I think it's SG-9. Was on a long-term mission to try to reestablish relations with a planet where the rogue NID people had gone previously. So I guess right. This is where I need to like remind you of the previous episode plot.
Look, the previously on was really cool. I really wish I'd seen that episode.
You absolutely did see
that. I have episode. No memory of it, but I think you should all know I have the vaccine brain fog today. So I'm sure. Going to chalk it up to that.
Well, I'll give you like a 10-second recap here. So basically they figured out that there was an NID team who had managed to get off world and they were stealing technology from other planets.
Oh yeah.
Bringing them back to their own base, and Mayborn was the contact on Earth who was in charge of this operation and organizing them, and Jack went in as like a mole to figure out who was in this operation and he got them all arrested.
Is there a train?
Yes, there is a train.
Okay. I'm like, what is that noise?
Yeah, I'm like 6 blocks from train tracks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I did know that.
So this is bringing back 2 of the characters from that NID episode. I think it's SG-9. They go to this planet to try to reestablish contact. And Grogan is on the team from the Proving Ground episode. One of the recruits. So he, I guess, is the second member placed on a team, as far as we know. Apparently, this team is 11 hours overdue. Hammond said that they were due back early in the morning. So I'm like, okay, I'm assuming then that we're like post dinner time right now. I'm like, but if they're 11 hours overdue, why are you only just now concerned about it? Why were you not dialing the Stargate and trying to contact them when they were like 2 hours overdue and then like 6 hours overdue? You know what I mean? Like,
do they have like, I'm wondering if they have like a threshold, like they have a 10-hour window if it's not like a life or death critical thing. They have like maybe, and like now they've just crossed that threshold and now he's worried. Cause you know, I'm like, you don't know what's happening on the other end. If it's like you're supposed to come back at X time, but like something is holding you up.
Yeah.
Or there's something you wanted to investigate or whatever. Like you have that wiggle room to come home.
I still feel just like
outside of it. Or he's been worrying about it this whole time, but Jack was too busy writing his report and just didn't notice.
But I still feel like even if you have an extra window of wiggle room, I feel like 6 hours would be plenty. You know, if it's been 11 hours and you're only just now dialing the Stargate, that seems a bit late to me.
Maybe there's other protocols to follow before they do that.
I don't know. And then, like,
and then usually when we see that, people are late, we're usually on the Stargate side, like the SG-1 side.
Yeah.
So maybe there's other stuff they had to do first.
Well, but then it also is like, okay, we're in the evening and we're finally dialing. And he is able to talk to Grogan a little bit, but the connection is shaky. And Grogan makes it clear that the Stargate is not secure. He can't get there, blah, blah, blah. And so Hammond is going to have to send a rescue team. But he waits until the next morning to do it. And I'm like, I understand waiting until the morning because then you can send a team fresh who has, you know, had a good night's sleep and it's in the daytime, so it's easier to like track and find your people, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's already been 11 hours past the time that they were due back, and you're gonna wait like another 11 hours before you send a team.
Okay, the logic of waiting to send a team so that everybody's like fresh and awake and aware, cool, but that should have nothing to do with like the time of day they would arrive. Like, it's our morning. It doesn't mean it's the morning where they're going.
I think it's generally assumed that pretty much every planet we go to has the same kind of sun schedule.
That's a very bold claim for this show to make.
Yes.
Like an extremely bold claim, because that's assuming every planet that has a roughly similar temperature and environment is equidistant to their sun. Like, that's a huge claim for a sci-fi show to make.
I mean, that's not something they ever explicitly come out and say. I think it's just one of those things where it's kind of treated that way for the ease of the plot, to like not make it overly complicated, because you can't, like, you can't have every episode be like, oh, well, it's 10 a.m. here, but it's 2 p.m. there, so...
No, I assume they're going in, like, planetary daytime, but doesn't have to correspond with Earth daytime.
Yeah.
Because they can just do that calculation on their end, and just whenever they're leaving, because we're indoors, we don't see what time it is on Earth. Whenever they're leaving is that planet's daytime.
Yeah, but then, like, the next scene is Hammond briefing SG-1 on this whole thing, and I'm just assuming that it's the next morning because we're already in the evening time and like Jack is like turning in a mission report probably before going home. You know,
well, he could just call them in though.
I don't know. I feel like it's a lot to assume that they left at like 8 or 9 p.m. our time to arrive daytime on another planet.
I think it's more to assume that one, that the planet has the same 24-hour-ish cycle that Earth does. And two, that they're like, they've been missing for 11 hours anyway, go to bed and we'll go in the morning. Like, I think that's a bigger assumption to make.
Okay, but when we actually do get to the planet and we talk to Grogan, he mentions how after he had talked to them, he was on the run from the Jafar and he had a firefight with them and he got knocked out and he was passed out in the bushes. And he said that happened last night. So it has been a night for him.
For him. Not necessarily for us.
When he called in, it was probably like 7-ish p.m. And then after that, he had the firefight. And he passed out. And he went to sleep all night long. And is waking up the next morning.
Okay, but it could have been like, let's say, 8-ish p.m.
Uh-huh.
And by the time they get the team together, muster everybody, Jack probably does need to take a nap. They get everybody together and go. It could be like 5 a.m. local time. It doesn't have to be a full 12 hours later.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be a full 12 hours. But I don't think that SG-1 went that night. I think they would have gone the next day, whatever time of day they start. And it might be 5 a.m., sure.
Okay, I feel like we're both saying the same thing. I just feel like it wasn't like a long turnaround. It was like a reasonably quick turnaround, all things considered. Because like, why would they leave them there for that long?
Well, because we also don't know exactly what time it was when they got that call, because Hammond said that they were due back early this morning. That could be 5 a.m. That could be 7 a.m. We don't really know. Sure. I mean, if they were due at 5 a.m., that means it's 5 p.m. now, and maybe they're not leaving until 5 again the next morning.
Contemplating space-time gives me a headache.
I feel like you're making it overly complicated.
Yeah. I'm going to drop it. I concede. Tapping out. I'm tapping out.
Yes, I win. So they go to this planet and they bring the two NID people who were in prison to help figure out what's going on with this Sentinel device, because it's probably not working. And the guy, there's like a man and a woman, and the guy just looks sleazy. I'm like, you don't have to tell me he's a bad guy.
The minute a little later, he asks Daniel to give him, I think it's Daniel, he asks him to give him a gun so he can go outside. And I'm like, and Daniel just does it. And I'm like, are you insane? This is the sketchiest man. Like, are you crazy? But he gives him the gun anyway.
Because it's Daniel. And he trusts people.
To his own detriment.
I mean, it ends up being fine. He doesn't shoot anybody he's not supposed to shoot.
But like,
he could have. But yeah, I have in my notes, no need to insult Sam. I'm not sure who insulted her. Probably the sleazy guy.
Probably.
I'm assuming.
Whoever you are, you come for Sam Carter, you come for us.
Right. And I guess I was kind of admiring in this episode how, you know, I feel like we hear over and over again from the Gwold and from the Tok'ra that the Gwold in general have much more advanced technology than Earth, and like they're constantly calling Earth primitive and, you know, like children, blah, blah, blah. I mean, certainly you could probably say that about some of their mental attitudes. But anyway, when it comes to technology, we're not necessarily as like backwards as the Gwold and Tok'ra say we are, because in this episode, they send through a UAV and the UAV paints targets on these two like little cannons that the Jaffa have pointed at the Stargate, and they send in like missiles to destroy the two cannons. And I'm like, that's good tech. And that there's not anything like that in Gwold tech. They don't have something that can remotely go through the Stargate and paint a target like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's military tech.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Gwold have a lot of military tech, but I feel like it's not as advanced as they claim it is.
I mean, look at who they're talking to most of the time.
Yeah.
They have an overinflated sense of self.
Yeah. But I mean, even the Tok'ra had that same attitude of like, holier than thou, like, we're so much more advanced than
you. Well, the Tok'ra just don't share. So the Tok'ra have like two popsicle sticks glued together with some silly putty. And they're like, behold our advanced technology, like for all we know.
Well, I've made the argument before that the Tok'ra really like overinflate themselves because they talk about having all of this advanced technology. I'm like, okay, but you've had literally the exact same technology for like 10,000 years.
They don't evolve.
Yeah. So like, yeah, okay, you have some cool stuff, but it has not changed in thousands of years.
Because they're complacent.
And like, so Earth may be starting off technologically less advanced, but they are improving rapidly. So, like, I don't think we could make the same argument that the Tari are not as advanced, because look at what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Maybe this is part of, like, the show propaganda in a way. You know, like,
nothing beats the might of the American military.
Exactly. I'm like, wait, am I accidentally buying into the subconscious messaging that I'm getting about the American military being exceptional?
This is a military show.
Yeah.
It's propaganda. We love it, but it is propaganda. So
And so there's a really, Daniel has a really good line right before they go through the Stargate to this planet that the sweep up the two NID people, and the woman is like, I'm really happy to have an archaeologist watching my back. And he holds up a knife by the tip, and it was in this like, remind me which end the bullets go in.
I couldn't tell if he was kidding. He must be kidding.
Of course he's kidding.
Like, for a second I was like, he's messing with her, right?
Yeah, of course. He was holding a knife.
It shows how little I think of Daniel that I'm like, I think this is a bit.
Of course.
I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, they don't give him the AR or whatever it is that they're carrying, M9. I don't know guns. Whatever. They have guns. They don't give him the big gun, but they give him the smaller gun, which apparently is a Beretta, because the sleazy guy says that later.
Good to know.
So whatever that means.
That was the name of a show. I assume that was the gun he carried.
Yeah. I know 9mm. I know that's a handgun. I guess a Beretta is also a handgun. I don't know.
A 45, and I know that because they talk about it in Clueless.
But it was like a Colt 45? Is that like a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is a 9mm the same thing as a Beretta? I don't know. People listening to this are like, y'all are so dumb.
I don't want to Google it either, because my FBI agent's going to be like, what are you looking at?
Listen, it's just for research for Stargate, okay?
It's for my podcast. So if you're listening to this and you know the difference and you can tell us without getting in trouble with your internet search history, please let us know.
It's fine. You understand what we're saying. Daniel doesn't get the big gun. He gets a small gun. It's fine.
Anyway.
So they're on this planet, and there are Jaffa, who belong to Lord Zvarog, who we met in the System Lord meeting, even though he barely got any screen time, and I think got like a single word line, maybe. Actually, I don't think even that, because when they were voting, I think he just nodded his head. So I don't think he got any lines. But yeah, it was that guy.
Good for him.
So his Jaffa gets way more screen time and lines than he does in this episode. So the Jaffa are here on the planet. They are imposing a curfew on the people who don't really understand. And a mothership is on the way. It's not quite here yet. And so Jack goes with Grogan to talk to like the leader of the people, while Daniel, Sam, and Teal'c are holding up out where the Sentinel is, and they first have to get into the force field in order to get to the Sentinel itself to try to figure out how to fix it. So it's this whole big thing. I am like kind of fascinated by the culture of these people on this planet, because essentially, hundreds of years ago, they got to a point where they were so technologically advanced that they built a weapon that can, I guess, disintegrate their enemies. I mean, it's like there's a flash of a white light and the people disappear. So who's to say what actually happens to them? But they build this incredibly advanced weapon. They also build an incredibly sophisticated force field to protect the weapon. It looks like they have advanced like architecture and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm assuming that they had some kind of religious revolution, because they got to a point where they didn't need to progress any more technologically, and people turned to more of philosophy and spiritual based lives instead of pursuing scientific interests. So what do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't know. Oh my God. I had something I wanted to say.
You lost it?
Yeah, it's gone. I latched onto the philosophical thing and there was something I wanted to say. It's gone.
It's okay. Maybe we'll come back to you.
Okay. Oh my God. I'm like, yes. And then this is not good.
Well, so essentially they have all this really advanced technology, but nobody knows how to use it because it was created hundreds of years ago and they all, you know, stopped creating things in order to pursue their religious interests. And so nobody knows how all this advanced stuff actually works.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. This is what I was thinking about. Was a little bit of complacency on their part because they're like this, they take all this stuff as a given.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like no interest to know how it works.
Yeah.
Which is like weirdly relevant to right now when you think about like, nobody's talking about like online people, but like, nobody's ever talking about this. This is so cool. And it's like, this was common knowledge like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's like shock. So I think it's like that on a much larger scale is that there was an assumption that somebody would maintain this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my problem.
Right.
Which I also think ties in well when they're like, we need to get you people out of here. And the guy's like, but our home. I'm like, this is like a somebody else's problem thing coming back now. It's like, no, this is very much your problem.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say. There we go. Ah, it came back.
I mean, I do see how that can apply a little bit to our society in that we all carry around these incredibly advanced computers in the palms of our hand. And we don't have no idea how they work.
I mean, some people do, but most of us don't.
Well, I mean, the people who make them do, or the people who can program or whatever, you know, engineers and programmers, coders, whatever. But, I mean, that's like a very small minority of the population. You know, 99.9% of the population probably has no idea how a smartphone actually works, right? We just use it and we kind of take it for granted in that way.
I'm not 100% sure how the internet works.
Same.
So... big thing to admit, but I'm like not 100% sure how it, like, I know what it is, obviously.
Yeah.
Recording this, I know how it, like, what it does.
Yeah.
In theory, I know how the internet works, but I'm not like, I don't know. And it, but I think that's interesting that you're drawing a parallel not to society in 2003, but like to society now.
Yeah.
With this show. And I feel like it's not the first time that's happened where this, like, other civilization. They'll be like, how could you let this happen? And then we look at today and we're like, oh, back out.
Yeah, that's, it's like actually incredibly realistic and relevant. Yeah.
Like, think about like what you were just saying, the fact that we have all this advanced technology, we have all these advancements in, I keep talking about my booster shot giving me the brain, but like, honestly, we have like medical advancements like that. Yep. We have technological advancements, and there are so many people who simply choose not to engage with it, or perceive it, or understand how it works.
Yeah,
and that's very telling.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's like not just technology itself, but I mean all kinds of related fields where you just, you know, you don't know how things work necessarily,
and like pursue your. Your philosophy, your joy, your art, your whatever, but like having no understanding of the world around you and no desire to know it either is alarming.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that also, that just ties in general to various kind of apocalyptic TV shows. I'm thinking like Station 11, something like that, where there's such a large kind of apocalyptic scale type event where all of the people who maintain the electrical grid, who maintain computer servers, are all dead. And so you can't use technology anymore. You're basically regressing to like the 1800s in terms of like what you can produce and make. And everyone's kind of like, how do we do that? Like, we rely so much on technology. If that suddenly is taken away from us, how do we even begin to start over? Because, like, theoretically, the knowledge is still out there. Like, there's still books. And, like, the electrical grid is still, like, technically in place. We just don't know how to operate it. So... Yeah,
I used to have thoughts like this when I was little, when we were like studying history, and it was like they were talking about like the 1700s or whatever. And I'm like, They had the potential for cable television. They just didn't know how to do it. Basically, but like, it's true. All the materials were there.
Yeah, sure.
They just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I guess really what I'm saying is that this episode is incredibly relevant today.
It's alarming, really. No, it's, as a whole, this show, the way this show is like relevant for its time, but yeah, still like more relevant now.
Yeah.
I guess that's why we asked if this holds up for a modern audience. I'd say this one definitely does. I know I jumped past the end of this episode, but this one definitely holds up.
Yeah. I feel like plot-wise, it can be a little slow in places.
Extremely. But the theory of it, like,
yes, the backbone of this story is really interesting. Yeah, so it's a really interesting... I feel like it would have been a little bit more interesting if we also had... I'm going to be a little mean. I feel like Marul is incredibly boring. He is such a nothing of a character.
You're not being mean. It's true.
He just has no personality. He's just like
there.
He's just there, like a wet mop of a person. I'm like, what are you doing? No hate to the actor.
No, none whatsoever. This is honestly, I think, a struggle I've been having with the show this season.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, it's kind of lost direction a little bit. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about our like overall season 4 and 5 impressions.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like it's kind of, the side characters lack pizzazz.
Yeah.
Overall.
That's true.
I think it's like they don't know what to do anymore. They have to like find their footing again.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, it's like they're trying a bunch of stuff to see what sticks. And so far, none of it's really sticking.
Yeah. I don't know. I do think we get a shakeup in season 6.
Of side characters?
Kind of.
Legally, you have to tell me what you're talking about.
There's, okay, yeah, I can't say anything.
Tell me! Oh my god. It's, okay, none of you will notice this, because there will be no interruption to the show, but we're finishing season 5 next week, we're doing our analysis, and then I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So I have to wait 3 weeks to see what she's talking about.
Yeah.
No, longer!
Well, you'll longer get it.
3 weeks.
You'll get a hint at what I'm talking about next week.
Okay. See if I can guess it based on next week.
Probably. You can probably guess.
Okay.
Ooh, it's we got some big episodes next week.
Goody.
I'm like sitting over here making a face, like trying to figure out how much to say.
Big episodes.
Get your tissue box out.
Oh no. Oh no.
Actually, I think you'll take it much better than I did, but you.
So Daniel's gonna die. Great.
Listen, everything's gonna be fine. It's gonna be fine. We'll get through it.
Okay. I'm glad that wasn't today. I feel something very emotional. I probably would have sobbed, whatever it is.
Okay, well then yeah, this is your warning for next week. It's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be a lot.
Goody.
Anyway, back to this episode. So we have Svarog, who is like trying to take over this planet, and then that sends me off on like a whole other mental tangent. Ready for mental tangent number 2. Okay, so I'm like, how does Agua'uld find out that a planet's defenses are suddenly down? Because like it happened here, but also like in Sumeria with the Thor's hammer. And so that just makes me think that the Gua'uld will just randomly, like, okay, maybe, like, I don't know, once a year or something, send a Jaffa through to these stargates to see if they can come back. You know what I mean? Like, send a Jaffa, if they don't come back, that planet is still protected. Send a Jaffa and they do come back, oh, hey, the planet's not protected anymore. We can go take it over. And I'm like, so how do you choose who goes through the Stargate? Is this like some Jaffa does something to piss off the Goa'uld, and so they get sent to one of these planets? And it's
they
like
draw straws.
Well, it's got to be like somebody did something wrong and they're going to get killed anyway, you know, out of anger. So might as well send them to this planet to see if the defenses still work. So I don't know. I think it's really, because it's just really interesting that it seems like within months of a defense system going down, like here and on Sumeria, that the Jaffa or the Goa'uld figure it out and they come to take over. I'm like, yeah, but how? Because Teal'c had said with Sumeria that it was like, no, every Jaffa was taught the Stargate address for that planet specifically to be told not to go there. So it was understood that they shouldn't go there because they would die.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess maybe one day if your boss tells you to go to this planet, you just know that you're going to die. Unless you happen to get extremely lucky and the defenses don't work anymore.
I guess. It's like a, what am I thinking? Like a death penalty planet?
Yeah.
Like you're given orders for essentially a suicide mission. And yeah, you know exactly what it is, but you're not in a position to say no.
Yep. Where have we seen that before? Oh, last episode in The Warrior.
Love a lack of self-preservation.
So anyway, back to this planet. They finally talk about the caretaker. So there's a guy that takes care of the Sentinel. And he might be connected to it. He might not be. The NID members aren't being super forthcoming about it. But they're eventually able to crack the code to get this force field open, because it has this whole like musical tone puzzle code to be able to get into it. So they are able to figure that out and get into it. And then they're like working on the Sentinel itself, trying to figure out what's going on. And the woman in this episode, Lieutenant Kershaw, is trying to tell the truth about what happened when they were on that planet. And Colonel Greaves is just like telling her to shut up. He doesn't want to like tell the truth of what really happened. And so we eventually find out that there was a caretaker who saw them messing with the device previously and came up to, you know, get them to go away and I guess attack them. And Colonel Greaves shot the caretaker, and he didn't immediately die. They could have taken them to the city to be healed, and Colonel Greaves would not let Kershaw take him there, so the caretaker died. And so it's obviously that there's some kind of connection between human and machine in order to keep the Sentinel working. So that brings into our whole, both of these episodes have a human and machine combination.
Wonder if that was intentional.
I don't know. I mean, probably not.
That feels like a weird choice. Hang on. I'm going to go up and see if there's any creative overlap. No, not the writing.
No, I mean, Peter DeLuise was involved in both, but it was like he helped write one and then directed the other one.
I mean, I feel like Peter DeLuise had a fairly supervisory role on this, given how involved he is, but maybe it's just a coincidence.
I don't know.
What was on everyone's mind in 2002? My God.
Well, technology advancing, computers advancing, possibilities.
Androids. Well,
you know, Daniel actually made the point that there are ancient cultures thousands of years ago on Earth who postulated the idea of putting somebody's mind into an inorganic body so that they could live forever. So this idea of immortality through...
But what was on everybody's mind at this point in 2002?
That's a good question. I do know.
This is also when the movie AI came out, isn't it?
Maybe there's like a AI boom.
Of 2001.
Well, I mean, so not too long before. Maybe there's just like a lot of like current cultural interest in the subject.
It must be because like this came out June 2001. That's probably when they started writing the season.
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
Yeah. So they do end up fixing that. So essentially to fix the device, Colonel Greaves like holds on to the Sentinel and he like melds with it. I'm honestly really confused about how this episode ended.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who's confused. He's like grabbing the machine and he's like, rah! And then like, I don't know what happens.
Well, Sam said that he was gone after that. So it makes it seem like he was physically absorbed into the machine. But I feel like that doesn't make sense because when we saw the caretaker in the flashbacks, he was like a person outside of the machine doing normal person things. So is it like you can come in and out of the machine? Like is Colonel Greaves still alive? Is he in there? Can he come back out? Is he dead?
What does like gone mean?
I honestly don't know. Like, was he absorbed into the machine or did it? I mean, we didn't see a body, so it didn't seem like he was like thrown against the wall and killed because I feel like they would have shown his body.
Probably.
So, like, maybe he was.
Maybe he got absorbed.
But then what now? Is he the new. Like, is he still alive in the machine? Is he the new caretaker? Do they have to get another caretaker? Like, I'm just so confused.
He's dead.
I mean, I guess for our purposes, he is dead, but I'm just really confused about how this device works and how the caretaker uses it. It's not clear to me. I don't know. In any case, neither one of the NID people get back to Earth. Lieutenant Kershaw dies of a staff blast, I'm pretty sure. I don't think they did. They get her out alive?
No.
I think she died, right?
Yeah, wasn't she like... Yeah, she died. So, she was like on the ground, all miserable and stuff. She died.
I think so. I'm trying to remember if like she still made it through that or not.
I thought she died.
Yeah. So I guess they both died? I don't know. I'm a little confused.
This was a bad episode, okay? The philosophical implications were interesting, but
yeah.
The plot was bad.
Yeah. And I'm also just confused about how the device determines who the enemy is. Because on other planets, we've had devices where it specifically targets the Gua'uld, in which case Teal'c should have been affected too. Although you could possibly argue that he wasn't affected because he was inside the force field. And so maybe he would not have been safe outside of it. But it doesn't necessarily, they never specifically said that it was to get rid of the Gua'uld. It just said to get rid of enemies. So how does the device determine who an enemy is?
One of two things. Either it's understood by them and the team and by extension by us that enemy means Gua'uld, or whoever gets absorbed into the device is now the arbiter of who the enemy is. I think the first option is more likely.
That is an interesting concept, like whoever the caretaker is.
Like, unless enemy being Gua'uld just goes without saying, I think it's...
You know, I mean, I could buy that in terms of if you have this machine that can do this incredible thing, what is the purpose of having a person tied to it so intricately? It could be because the machine needs a person to decide which things to attack.
Just seems a shame not to like elaborate on that more, but
yeah. I mean, it makes sense because then the caretaker would theoretically be able to say like, okay, yeah, SG-1 is cool, but not the Gua'uld. So like save these guys, but kill the rest.
Yeah.
It just depends on the caretaker being able to figure that out. Yeah, see, there's so many good, like, kernels of story in here. And I feel like they focused on the wrong things.
They really did.
Like, they focused more on the action when there were so many interesting concepts that they could have like spent more time on. Like, how does this device work? Why is it like a 2-in-1 man and machine type thing? I assumed it was more of like a sacrifice type thing. Like, if you want to use this weapon, you have to sacrifice somebody in order to understand how serious it is, like that kind of thing. But not necessarily. I mean, it could be that the machine needs a brain to function.
I think that's certainly the more interesting option. I just don't know that that's a thought that anybody involved with the show actually put into it.
Yeah, they really should have
thought about this more.
Yeah, I don't know. It just felt like it ended so abruptly. When the episode ended, I was like, well, that's it? Like, that was really fast.
Yeah.
And another thing. Jack offers multiple times to evacuate all of these people in case they're not able to get the Sentinel working again. I'm like, okay, but this city looks large enough to hold millions of people. You could not possibly evacuate anywhere close to that. You could evacuate a few hundred. Like,
maybe that's all he intended to do. As we saw last week, they are very selective with who they evacuate. I'm still not over it.
Wait, which part?
Was that last week? Where we had a whole thing about, like, why is the American military the arbiter?
Oh, yeah, That was fail-safe with the asteroid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because, like, the logistics of evacuating people, like, well, for one thing, the Jaffa are there trying to enact a curfew, so they would have to fight their way through the Jaffa first anyway. But even if they didn't have that resistance and they were able to evacuate through the Stargate, logistically, you could not evacuate millions of people back to Earth because, one, they would not fit in the SGC.
He doesn't mean it.
But, two, like, that would take hours. That would take many trips through the Stargate, lots of planning. Like, there's just no way. That's not happening.
He didn't mean it. That's what it is.
I think he just means, like, we'll take, you know, the first few dozen or hundreds that we can fit in one trip. Good backbones in both of these stories. I think the replicator mother thing is interesting. I think the philosophy of the people on this planet is interesting. But, yeah, a little shy on the execution of these ideas.
Agreed.
We did have an SG3 guy say Gault for his pronunciation, but that's not a new pronunciation to add to the list because that's the exact same way that Yusuf said that in the Tok'ra episode.
Well, there we go. I also noticed somebody, instead of saying Jaffa, said Jaffa. And I'm like the city of Palestine. I know, but I don't hear it often.
We will get a brand new pronunciation of Gwo'uld in next week's episode, actually.
How else could they possibly say it? My money's on Gwo'uld.
Not that weird. Not that many syllables.
Gwo'uld. The Gwo'uld.
Similar. You're almost there.
Oh my god, really?
Different vowel sound, but very short.
No, not Gwo'uld, because that's what happened. Gwo'uld.
You're almost there.
All right, I'll figure it out next week.
Okay. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily anything problematic other than like Jack being an a-hole.
Yeah.
And not recognizing the personhood of the android.
Agreed.
But yeah, and also, I feel like that's more of a character thing than like a problematic thing.
So. Yeah, that's bad writing.
Yeah. Otherwise, I feel like they were okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so next week we are going to be discussing SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 21 and 22, which are the last two episodes of the season, Meridian and Revelations.
Where I will cry.
Apparently. I mean, I cry. I cried when I was watching it, so.
Oh, boy.
Just FYI. I feel like everyone listening who has already seen it, which is probably everyone, is like, okay, brace yourself. So are you ready for your next quote?
Ready as I'll ever be.
I am not going to do justice to this delivery, but I will do my best. You have an effect on people. The way you look at things, it changed me too. I see what really matters. God, I don't know why we wait to tell people how we really feel.
I know what I want this to be. I know what I want this to be.
What do you want it to be?
I want it to be Sam or Jack talking to the other one. Okay. I'm going to go with Sam.
Okay.
No. Jack talking to Sam. But she's unconscious. I don't have context. She's either in like the infirmary because something happened, or she's unconscious on a mission. That I'm aware, if you've seen this episode and you're listening to this going, oh my God, this fool. But you know what? It's the last episode of season 5. And I know if that's what I want it to be. So we're going with pure wish fulfillment.
Okay.
And I will take it as a win if it's the other way around. I just feel like Jack is far more cynical than Sam. So Sam wouldn't be like, I want to see things the way you do, like an asshole. So I think the other way around. But that's what I want it to be. And if you did some sort of bait and switch where it's like Daniel pouring his heart out, like I will be devastated. Probably going to be Daniel.
Well,
why are we telling people how we really feel? Daniel's got nothing to say. Daniel doesn't even know how he feels about his wife. Oh, I got one more in there. Anyway, that's my guess.
Another burn.
Last one to close it out.
Oh, man. Oh, I can't wait till next week. Okay. That's it for today. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, we'd love for you to rate us 5 stars for if you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can find us on our podcast Twitter and Tumblr page at Wormhole Waffles. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at ArzuAmin. I'm at ArzuAmin.bluesky.social on Blue Sky, obviously. I'm at ArzuD2 everywhere else. So Twitter, not Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Tumblr, which I don't use, but I should. As a network, we are on Twitter at Geeky_Waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We are The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. We're at TheGeekyWaffle.com. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/TheGeekyWaffle.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.